Hello and welcome to this podcast, which covers the discussions at the September meeting of the International Accounting Standards Board, held in London from the 21st to the 24th of September. My name is Kristina Reitan and I'm part of the communications team at the IFRS Foundation. I'm joined by Sue Lloyd, ISB member, and Hugh Shields, Executive Technical Director, to talk through the discussions and decisions taken at the September board meeting. Before I hand over to Sue and Hugh, I just want to mention that the views shared in this podcast are those of the participants. They do not necessarily represent those of the ISB. Sue, one of the topics discussed at the board meeting was insurance. Do you want to take us through the details?
Sure. One of the topics extensively discussed last week was insurance contracts, and there were two distinct discussions. And I'll talk first about the discussions that we had about the interaction between the effective date of IFRS 9 and the timing of the insurance contracts standard. Some of you listening may know that in July the board met and tentatively decided to propose an overlay approach which would enable entities that applied IFRS 9 before they applied the new insurance contract standard to take some of the additional volatility out of profit or loss that might arise as a result of applying IFRS 9 instead of IAS 39. And at the meeting last week, the board talked again about that overlay approach, really to confirm some of the details of who that would be applicable for and how it would work. And the key things that the board decided there was to permit entities to choose to make this overlay adjustment when they have financial assets that are designated as being related to insurance contracts, and to apply the overlay adjustment in respect of financial assets that are classified as fair value through profit or loss that would not have been classified that way under IAS 39. And the board decided that that would be an election and that an entity could choose to make that election when they first apply IFRS 9, so as at that date. The other thing that the board discussed was an additional approach, which the board decided to propose in addition to the overlay approach. And this was an approach whereby the application of IFRS 9 could be deferred by some entities. And most of the discussion was about which entities might be eligible for such a deferral. What the board decided in the end was that the deferral would be available, again a choice, for entities where, at a consolidated group level, the predominant activity of the entity was to provide insurance. And the board decided that the way you determine whether or not you were such an entity would be by looking at the amount of gross liabilities you have arising from contracts within the scope of insurance accounting relative to your total liabilities. And if that was a high number, we won't set a quantitative number, but if that was a high number, there'll be some examples given in the basis for what we mean by that, then you would be eligible for this choice. Now, obviously, one of the things the board's grappled with any proposal to defer the application of IFRS 9 is ending up in a situation where we would have some entities in the market, for example, banks applying IFRS 9 and potentially some insurance entities not applying IFRS 9, or even a situation where some insurance companies are applying IFRS 9 and others aren't. And so we had a talk about what disclosures might accompany a deferral approach to assist users of financial statements to make comparisons across participants in the market. And the board tentatively decided that entities that apply the deferral should be required to provide information about the characteristics of their financial assets and their credit quality in accordance with IFRS 9. Now, the discussion about what we would do in terms of an exposure draft actually spanned over a couple of days. It was a tough discussion. For those of you who listened to the debate, you'll know that it was a very close vote in terms of whether the board would support these proposals or not. On balance, the board voted to issue an exposure draft to propose the overlay approach and the deferral. We hope to publish that exposure draft before the end of the year. We will agree on the comment period at our October meeting. But one of the important discussions about the deferral option and what will be proposed in the exposure draft is that the overlay approach would be available up until the time that an entity changes to apply the new insurance contract standard to be issued in the future, But in contrast, the deferral approach would only be available for a limited period of time, and the board is proposing that an entity could only defer the application of IFRS 9 up until annual reporting periods beginning on or after the 1st of January 2021. From that date, if there was still no insurance contract standard, the board confirmed that an entity could apply IFRS 9 in conjunction with the overlay approach from that point in time. So that was the interaction between IFRS 9 and IFRS 4. On the main insurance contracts project, we again had a very extensive discussion about some of the mechanics related to participating contracts. And in particular, what we were discussing at last week's meeting was how the split between other comprehensive income and profit or loss would work for participating contracts. And the board tentatively decided that the objective of disaggregation between OCI and profit or loss would be to provide cost-based information in profit or loss for those contracts. The board decided not to specify very detailed mechanics for how to make that cost-based measurement, but rather to describe the objective of the measurement and to make it clear that the mechanic should result in an allocation of the yield over the life of the insurance contract on a systematic basis. The board also had a specific discussion about how that split between OCI and P&L might work for contracts where there's no economic mismatch between the insurance contract and the underlying items held by an entity. And the board decided that in this case, rather than having an objective of presenting cost-based information, the objective would be to eliminate any accounting mismatches in profit or loss between the insurance investment expense and the items held that are measured using a cost measurement basis in profit or loss. And this is what we've sometimes called the current period book yield approach. So the board voted in favour of that for those contracts where there are no economic mismatches. The last thing I'll just mention is that the board also decided that there should be an accounting policy choice for contracts with participating features that's similar to the policy choice that we had previously decided would be available for insurance contracts without participating features. So that means that for such contracts, an entity could choose as its accounting policy either to disaggregate changes in market values between profit or loss and OCI, or to present the insurance investment expense and profit or loss using a current measurement basis. And as for our previous decisions, that choice would be available as an accounting policy choice for groups of similar assets. And if there was any change in that policy, it would be in accordance with IAS 8. So really on the choice, we aligned the way that it worked for non-participating contracts and participating contracts. Now, our insurance discussions were very extensive. I think we had something like 14 papers that were discussed by the board last week. So those of you who are particularly interested in the insurance discussions, on our website, we also have a specific podcast that's just focused on the decisions made by the board last week and those discussions on the insurance contracts project. With that, I think we hand over to Hugh.
Thank you very much, Sue. Well, among the other topics discussed by the board was the disclosure initiative, and there were two topics within the disclosure initiative that were discussed by the board. The first was some proposed amendments to IAS 7, which is the Statement of Cash Flows, and this is an area where we consistently have had feedback from users that we need to make improvements. And so this was the reason why the board published an exposure draft some months back. And really there are two different elements to these proposed amendments. The first is a proposed reconciliation of liabilities arising from financing activities. The board discussed a paper that sets out the staff's analysis of the feedback that we've had in relation to this exposure draft. The exposure draft in this area requires a disclosure of a reconciliation of liabilities arising from financing activities and related changes to the IFRS taxonomy. As a result of these discussions, the board tentatively decided to proceed with this amendment to IAS 7, subject to a number of things, however. Firstly, including in the standard an objective for the disclosure requirement. Secondly, clarifying in the standard that an entity has flexibility to determine what information is needed and to what extent to meet the disclosure objective. And thirdly, providing a further illustrative example to the standard. On the proposed changes to the IFRS taxonomy, the board tentatively decided not to include anticipated common practice elements in the taxonomy for the amendment to IS7 related to the reconciliation, and also to continue performing research and outreach on the potential inclusion of anticipated common practice elements in the taxonomy. So that was the first element of the IS7 amendments discussion. There was a second element which relates to cash restrictions. And the board also discussed the proposal in the exposure draft to require entities to provide information that is relevant to understanding the liquidity of an entity, and including matters that affect the decision of an entity to use cash and cash equivalent balances. Here, there was quite a wide discussion. In the end, the board asked the staff to continue developing the proposals in this area and to return at a future meeting with further developed proposals. So that was the first major topic discussed within the disclosure initiative. There was then separately a discussion of some drafting of disclosure requirements, which is some work that has been undertaken by the New Zealand Accounting Standards Board. And these drafting requirements are very much focused on encouraging preparers to exercise judgments and to really adopt a more principles-based approach to disclosure rather than a more prescriptive rules-based approach. There had been already some early discussion in meetings earlier on in the year, and the board, after discussion, agreed with the refined version of the proposed approach and tentatively decided to include the draft chapter presented in the papers in the Principles of Disclosure discussion paper. That discussion paper will be coming out in the next few months. And with that, I'll pass back to Sue.
Okay. We had a discussion last week about the conceptual framework exposure draft, which is out for comment at the moment. And what we discussed here was some requests that we have received to consider extending the comment period deadline for the conceptual framework exposure draft and the related exposure draft on updating references to the conceptual framework in IFRS. And people have told us that given the importance of the conceptual framework, that they would like some more time to consider their comments. So the board discussed that and decided to extend the deadline for comments by 30 days to the 25th of November 2015. And really what the board was doing there was trying to balance allowing people enough time to give us well thought through and considered comments, which are always helpful to us, but also the fact that we do want to move ahead and try and wrap the conceptual framework project up on a timely basis. Another thing that we discussed last week was in relation to IFRS 15, our revenue from contracts with customers standard. And the board discussed an issue that was raised and discussed at the Transition Resource Group for Revenue Recognition at their July meeting. And it's to do with the transition requirements in IFRS 15 and in particular what the treatment is for contracts that are considered to be completed contracts in accordance with IFRS 15. Really, the discussion was around confirming what the term completed contracts means in IFRS 15 and whether that was clear, and then as a secondary issue, what the transition requirements would be for those contracts. So the basic idea in IFRS 15 is that if a contract is a completed contract, you don't need to apply IFRS 15 to it. You would continue to apply IAS 18 to it. And the board confirmed that that was indeed the intention of the transition requirements. Based on the discussion, the ISB decided that it was not necessary to propose any amendments to the transition requirements in IFRS 15. We felt that the requirements were clear. But the board did note that the discussion we had last week, the associated board paper, and also the transition resource group discussions on the issue should be helpful for stakeholders when they're looking at the transition requirements to confirm how we intend that they be read.
So turning to the last topic that we want to talk about on the podcast, we'd set aside a day for a joint meeting with the US Financial Accounting Standards Board. And this was a mixture of education sessions and also a decision session, decision-making session. So in there was a there were joint education sessions with the FASB on three topics, which is the disclosure initiative, insurance contracts, and the conceptual framework. There were no decisions made in these sessions. As I say, they were purely mutual education sessions. There was then, however, a session on business combinations, which was a joint decision session with FASB. It covered really two areas. Firstly, the definition of a business, and secondly, goodwill and impairment. And so just from our point of view, from the ISB point of view, these are topics which have followed from the post-implementation review of IFRS 3 on business combinations and have resulted in two research projects post the post-implementation review. Well, the FASB explained that in relation to the definition of a business, they have a project to improve the application of the definition of a business and that they plan to publish an exposure draft soon. As I mentioned, the board has a project on the definition of a business on its research agenda. The two boards discussed the project summaries presented by the ISB and the FASB staff, including the FASB's tentative decisions on how to clarify the definition of a business. And the ISB decided that the ISB staff should bring an analysis of the issues already deliberated and agreed by the FASB to a future ISB meeting. And this will allow the ISB to consider whether and how to amend IFRS 3 on business combinations. And then secondly, there was a discussion of goodwill and impairment. And here the FASB also has active projects on its agenda for goodwill, which includes impairments, and separately for the accounting for identifiable intangibles in a business combination. The ISB in its turn has related topics in the research phase covering the impairment test, subsequent accounting for goodwill, and the identification and measurement of intangible assets. The two boards discussed the summaries presented by the staff and the timing and overlap of these projects, but no decisions were made.
Thank you, Sue. Thank you, Hugh. We haven't covered all the topics that were discussed at the meeting last week in this podcast. So before we finish, I just want to remind you that the official summary of the September board meeting, which is called the ISB update, can be found on the IFRS Foundation's website, www.ifrs.org, and that contains further information on all the other topics that were also discussed. Thank you for listening.